From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 660, Managing Groups and Teams in Office 365 with guest Tony Redmond. Recorded Thursday, September 12th, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Tony Redmond, who works as the principal of his own consulting company, Tony Redmond & Associates, helping companies figure out technology strategy or accomplish specific goals. And apart from his experience gained over many years at Digital Compact and Hewlett Packard, Tony remains a practicing technologist and an MVP for Exchange Server. Exchange Server? That can't be right. You've got to be an Office 365 MVP.
I am
now.
An Office 365. But I am known as the grumpy old man or the Exchange Godfather.
Yes.
I'm not sure which title I really like. None of them, maybe.
Yeah, which is more complimentary?
I don't know. But I do Office 365 now. Anyway,
yes.
That's the point.
You can't argue with the sheer success of Office 365. Like, of all of the things that Microsoft has put on the cloud, this seems to be the one that's just sort of... Do you think it's the gateway drug? Is this the first product that CIOs buy in the cloud?
Well, Satya said, I think it was about 4 years ago, he said that email was the gateway drug to the cloud.
Right.
I certainly saw that in the initial migrations to Office 365, which were pretty well all Exchange, because Exchange was easy to move. The migration tools were well shut down. They were based on the tools that were used on premises, and they just went into the cloud and everything worked. And, you know, that's what we did for the first couple of years of Office 365.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's really only in the last couple of years, and we're now 8 years through the Office 365 journey, that SharePoint has come alive and OneDrive has come alive. And of course, we've seen this phenomenon of Teams, which is also driving some growth.
Yeah.
But Office 365, it just keeps on growing, clocking up 3.5 million new seats a month. And
that's
done
amazing.
That for the last 4 years. And that's just phenomenal.
I got to jump back to a show we did in 2016 when we were talking about moving public folders to the cloud, because that to me is still, you know, one of the hardest pieces of that whole equation. That's actually 478. You know, here we are recording 658. So, you know, sometime later. And Dave said, "Hey guys, I really enjoyed this show. I'm very glad to say I've not suffered a workplace where my Exchange servers have had public folders to abuse. I came to Exchange servers rather late in 2007 and somewhere, recognizing that public folders were an abuse item earlier than that. When I started my current job about a year and a half ago, and granted, that'd be like 4.5 years ago now, my first goal in the first couple of weeks of working there was to get mail up onto 365 from an old small business server box. I'd supported other companies on 365, but having moved up there, my current company, I really am enjoying the lack of patching and enhancements like you get with the 365 features. In the last couple of weeks, we started assessing the project planner tool because we used to use SharePoint TaskList. And even though we get an error in loading the conversion, I find it a much better way of working and collaborating on smaller tasks. I believe the issue we're having is something to do with a distribution group that isn't really a distribution group, but something like that. I love all these migration issues, right? Like, they're all bizarre. I do worry that we might have to start making end users create a lot of project groups and 365 groups, and then we'll end up with the same way we had a whole bunch of hidden SharePoint sites and the administration nightmare down the line. But for now, it's new and shiny, and so it sits in the realm of IT guys to play and enjoy.
Mm.
Which, you know, you can't argue with this issue of the propagation thing, things that happen with SharePoint. Like, we allow our users to create certain things that often gets out of hand.
Oh yeah, I mean the guy's spot on. A long time ago, going back to a meeting in the Redmond conference room, and it was probably November 2014. I have this really strong memory of the people who were running Office 365 groups at the time. It was brand new. we'd come together to listen to what their vision was. And they came up and they started talking about Office 365 groups. And we said, okay, better distribution group. That sounds okay. We could live with that. You know, tied to SharePoint. Yeah, that seems like a good idea. We might get rid of public folders because we've got a good place to put shared documents. And then they dropped this horrendous clangor where they said, you know what? Anybody can create new groups. And we're just looking at them and saying, guys, we appreciate that you may have taken some happy pills, but did you ever look at public folders?
Yeah.
Because this is exactly the problem that we faced in 1996 when Microsoft came out and said, you know what, we've got this new way of doing collaboration. It's called public fora, which then became public fora folders. And it's great because anybody can create a public forum and you can collaborate to your heart's degree. And, you know, it's going to be great. A couple of years later, probably around the 99 period, we looked at each other and said, oh, God, this is a mess. And you know what? We are dealing with that mess today.
Right.
We are dealing with people who have got 500,000 public folders and they don't know how to get it off them. They don't know how to deal with them. They don't know how to make them compliant. And what I see in the routes that were laid down in Office 365 groups in November 2014, where Microsoft set off on this happy journey of, oh, everybody can create a group, which later parlayed itself into everybody can create a team, is that we are going to head for the rocks and we will have a chaotic sprawl of teams facing people to manage in the near future. And it's just dreadful what you see. And, you know, a part of it is that I don't know why Microsoft insists on doing this. They build this policy-driven framework to manage teams, which is right. Actually quite good because it allows you to have granular management of features down to the user account level, basically by assigning policies to accounts. But then as they introduce new features, they come along and they enable all those features immediately without a by your leave to the attendant administrators. Just like, oh, we're doing this. We're just enabling this new feature. And this means then that as new features are rolled out, people will start using them without control. And once a feature is in the wild, it's really, really, really difficult to rein it back and bring it under control. So I, you know, there is that attitude inside Microsoft. We're building software and we're going to enable it and let everybody use it. And it's going to be great. And that I think is okay and acceptable for a large proportion of the Office 365 community, which are the small to medium businesses where you don't really have IT administrators and you know what, they're just going to do a so-so job of managing anyway. So you might as well let them have everything, all the toys in the basket. But for the enterprise, it just doesn't work. And we are going to head for some really bad retrenchments.
Absolutely.
In the future.
Hey, Dave, you've clearly kicked off a path for the show. So thanks so much for your comment. And a Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on LinkedIn and Facebook. We publish every show there. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, we'll send you a mug. This recurring theme of it's almost like Microsoft creating rebellions, right? Where they give the tools, quote unquote, to the people before they put decent governance around it so that you can manage it to some degree. I mean, it happens over and over again.
Yeah. And those of us that have been around Microsoft for years and years and years know that this happens.
Right.
Because it's a long running saga. It has many episodes. You've read the script before. It happens time and time again. And you know what? It's totally natural. And it goes back to human nature. Humans are great at creating things. They love to create new things. But they hate doing all the administration.
Right.
And building admin features falls into the administration category. I had this exact discussion today with a group of devs who are working on a new feature. Well, it happens Exchange Online, which I can't comment about because I'm under NDA. But I was talking to them and said, you realize that if you go along this way, you're going to make it very difficult for admins. And they said, oh, yeah. But we're thinking about an admin API, but yeah, we just haven't figured out how to do it yet. It's kind of like, guys, you're in the middle of developing this feature and you haven't figured out yet how you're going to administer it. You guys have clearly never worked in system administration, because if you'd had that responsibility, you'd never take that attitude. But it's natural. It's human nature.
Right.
Get over it. Why am I still complaining about this? I don't know.
And I know I've been in the room watching the Microsoft guys just get sad when they bring this up to a group of folks that have worked in the field for a while, and they always ask the same question. So can I turn it off?
Yep.
All right. And of course they hate the Microsoft folks hate that because it's like, if you just turn it off, nobody's going to use it. Then, you know, I've failed. It's like, well, yep. Give me granularity so that I have control for if it's turned on, or let me turn it off, one or the other.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's not a failure when a feature is turned off. In fact, it's a triumph because you turn off the feature to prepare for the feature. If you prepare for the feature is going to be better used and better appreciated.
Right.
Which leads to better outcomes. You don't get failures when people are trained to use features. You only get failures when people aren't trained, stumble into them, don't know how to use it, go ahead and deploy, like teams, like, you know, a sprawl of teams or a sprawl of channels within a team, and you end up with chaos. And that's just bad.
So are there decent administration tools around the distribution groups and teams now in Office 365? Do you have some way of recognizing, hey, this channel hasn't been used in a year, or we can get rid of it?
Oh, yeah. I, you know, to be fair to Microsoft, I think one of the best things I have seen is the group's expiration policy.
Right.
Now, when it was originally launched a couple of years ago, it solely dealt with groups on the basis of age. You know, after 2 years, your team's going to expire, your group's going to expire. We'll send you a warning. If you don't respond within 30 days, we're going to delete it. Okay, or you renew it and get another 2 years. All works well. However, there are sometimes that kind of approach doesn't work so well. Like, for example, with Teams, because Teams administrators might not log into email to read the notice to say, hey, you got to renew this team.
Right.
Oh, so it's a problem. But now they've got this new version, which is in preview. I think it'll be in general availability pretty soon, where they use the signals collected in the Microsoft graph to detect whether a group or a team is actually being used. So it's looking for things like, for example, in the SharePoint site belonging to the team or group, has somebody uploaded a document recently? In a team, has somebody accessed the channel? Inside an Office 365 or Outlook group, has somebody contributed to a conversation through OWA? And these are all important signals, if you will, that the group is still needed.
And something that would be impaired if it was removed.
Let me just finish this picture, and then you can go back to me. So what happens is that if they look back over the entire period since the group was last renewed, and if they find evidence that it's in use, they just go and automatically renew it.
Right.
Which I think is absolutely the right thing to do. So that, to be fair, is one of the nice pieces of administration functionality I see inside Office 365. The only bad thing, of course, is that it's a premium feature.
Right.
You have to pay more for it. But, you know, hey, nothing good in life is free.
Well, and it's Azure AD premium that you need, which I think it's pretty hard to argue as soon as you're an organization of a certain size, you've got to have premium.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think that, you know, for a couple of years, I gave Microsoft a lot of crap, AKA useful advice in my eyes anyway, that perhaps some of the features that they considered premium were not really premium. For example, a naming policy I don't think is premium. I don't think control over group creation is premium either.
Right.
I don't think that the assignment default classification for groups and teams is a premium feature either. But something like a group expiration policy, I absolutely can see the logic of it being a premium feature. And anyway, this is rapidly becoming a moot point because if we look at the numbers, and it's always good to go back to data to make arguments.
Sure.
If you look at the numbers, Microsoft recently said that over 100 million people are now using enterprise mobility and security, and the vast majority of those are using it with Office 365. Now, that speaks to, you know, the success Microsoft is having in transitioning people from just Office 365 to the Microsoft 365 suite are upgrading Office 365 by adding EMS. But really what's happening, what that means in the context of this argument, our discussion, is that people don't have to go and buy separate Azure AD premium licenses because they've already gotten as part of the EMS. So it's all good.
Right. Your need for mobile management in Azure basically gives you Azure Premium, AD Premium in the process.
Oh, yeah, but there's lots of other reasons for using AD Premium, not least conditional access policies.
Right.
You know, which in a world of constant ongoing attack in the cloud, you know, conditional access policies, I think for any enterprise are pretty well mandatory, I would say.
Yeah, these things, their actual cost compared to cleaning up from those kinds of attacks is just trivial.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, it was... you know, there are multiple layers that you can go in. And some of the stuff that's free of charge inside Office 365 can actually suppress a lot of the attacks. So harking back to my Exchange roots, let me just give a shout out to the Exchange developers who last year delivered protocol authentication policies, which basically allow you to disable basic authentication for a whole pile of protocols that you don't need.
Right.
Like you don't, you know, if you're not using POP3, you're not using IMAP4, then just disable access to all of those protocols. And the reason why that's important is that the vast majority of password spray attacks come in using basic auth. So if you can kill that off at the right at the knees, you suppress a whole pile of attacks. And people say, well, you know, if I have conditional access policies, does that help? Yeah, but the two of them do even better together, because if you stop people even being able to penetrate a little bit by using basic auth, right? Basic auth happens before conditional access
right.
kicks in. So that's where you want to stop them. You want to stop the guys stone dead at the barrier to your tenant. And that's why protocol access policies are so important for Exchange Online. And the guys in the Exchange Online team did a great job of implementing them about a year ago.
Absolutely. And Tony, I'll interrupt you for one moment for this very important message.
This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information for SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as the new features in the latest version of SQL Server 2019. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, November 18th to 21. Use code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration at SQLintersection.com. See you there.
And we're back. It's Richard Campbell. This is RUNAS Radio. I'm talking to my friend Tony Redman about the fun and adventure that is groups and teams in Office 365. But hearkening back to this, just turning off basic auth, that's the script kiddie thing, right? That they're just sweeping, looking for those ports being open. And if you close them, then they don't even know there was a door there in the first place, right? They just go on by. Like it's like putting a club on your steering wheel. It doesn't make your car impossible to steal, but all the guys who wanted any car are just going to skip you.
Yep, that's so right. In discussions with the Microsoft security guys, they'll tell you that just doing this one thing will kill the majority of attacks against your tenant. Just that one thing.
Right.
Just disable basic auth. And then for the next thing you do, which will disable a lot more of them, is implement MFA.
Right.
For everybody. And between those two things, which are free of charge, built into Office 365, you've got a much more secure tenant.
Yeah. It seems to me that the pay features, these premium features, are really about governance and manage, you know, keeping things orderly, more the group policy related stuff for IT pros to operate that the average small shop is just never going to get to.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And to be fair, we live in a much more complicated or sophisticated, whichever word you want to use, world today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of years ago, nobody would have worried too much about GDPR,
right,
for example. Today, everybody worries about GDPR. So, you know, you got to be really, really, really cognizant of that when it comes to data governance, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of years ago, I think e-discovery was kind of a passing reference in the minds of many people.
Right.
Exchange 2010 was the first version to bring in e-discovery searches. And You know, I remember people looking and said, we never need to use these. What's a hold anyway? You know, why would I want to put anybody in litigation hold? Today, you know, e-discovery is everywhere because of GDPR, for example.
Yeah.
So we live in a world which is more complicated. And I think the add-on and the premium features that Microsoft builds into things like Office 365 into E5 plan or built into Azure AD Premium, a lot of them can be pretty well justified because they just save people's time.
Yeah.
And time is the most precious commodity we have.
Well, and you can be compliant without these things. It's just your work. And now, you get through an audit really fast if you show you're using this Office 365 stuff. The auditors just lose interest. They know how that works and they move on.
Yeah, or you show the auditors a pile of PowerShell scripts that you've written to do it and they start quizzing you about how you maintain those scripts.
Yep.
And how you validate those scripts and test those scripts and QA those scripts against all the changes that come out in Office 365, which is the other little issue that administrators have to deal with today. You know, in days gone by when Exchange and SharePoint and Link came out every 3 years and we all got very excited when the three-year clock ticked over, you know, you had lots of time for planning, lots of time for beta testing, lots of time for reading up on all of the blog posts about the new version, and you could rely on software that was going to be consistent for a while. You could rely on documentation that was going to be consistent for a while. There's none of that today.
Right.
So administrators need the time to actually understand what's going on. And that's why I like the automation. I like some of these premium features that do that kind of heavy lifting for admins to give them back time to go and really dedicate to stuff that's more important for them.
Yeah, well, we never worry about the argument I've made. You never worry about not having work, right? No IT shop I've ever seen got to the bottom of the to-do list.
That's for sure.
But the work is very different. It's not nowhere near as repetitive as it used to be. You know, you automate your onboarding procedures and you automate, you use standards for audits and things so that you just don't spend as much time on that because there's so many other things to do.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to do. And the thing about it is, and too, about Office 365, the one great thing I think it's done for administrators is that it has expanded the horizon for administrators.
Right.
You know, a couple of years ago, people were Exchange admins or they were SharePoint admins. And do you think SharePoint admins and Exchange admins would talk to each other?
Well, what for? Do mail and you do collaboration. Like, what do I care?
Yeah. Despite the fact that, of course, Exchange was at the heart of the very first version of SharePoint.
Sure. So
back in the SharePoint portal 2001, which used the same database as Exchange. It uses an ESE database at the time. But anyway, the point is that people had very clearly defined responsibilities and demarcation lines of what they would do. Today, I think within Office 365, you don't have people who just specialize in one thing. You may have a major in one thing because of your background. You may know email backwards, but now you need to know SharePoint. You need to know OneDrive for Business. You need to know Teams. You need to know Planner, Stream, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and all the user interfaces. Even if you were to take a small thing like PowerShell and say, well, okay, I could do PowerShell because I've done PowerShell scripts for, let's say, Exchange over the years. Now you might have to deal with PowerShell for 8 different modules, all of which slightly different ways of representing objects and working with properties, et cetera, et cetera. So all of a sudden, you know, that becomes a little bit more difficult as well. But it's an opportunity to expand your horizon.
Sure.
Which is one of the great things I think Office 365 has done for people who are successful with Office 365, that these are the people who have expanded their horizons, who have become an expert in much more than one base technology, who understand that, for example, the mission for Exchange is no longer to be the center of an ecosystem. It's to be the provider of email services to a whole pile of other apps.
Right.
In the same way, the SharePoint is no longer the center of a document management ecosystem. SharePoint is no more than document management for all of Office 365. So, you know, it's a totally different mission. People have got to get that. When they do get that, I think they get a lot more out of the overall Office 365 journey.
I just don't know that we feel like experts anymore. That it's just, it's like you're just paddling in the surf and just trying to keep your head above water, learning all these different things. Like, I mean, getting into that whole management of groups, it's like I'm I am not going to sit as an expert in groups and I set up everybody's group. They're going to self-provision, but I have to put governance around it. So I study governance long enough to set a set of rules to try and keep this more or less under control. And I'll go back and look at it in a quarter to see how, you know, wild it's gotten. But I don't know that I ever feel like an expert.
Well, yeah, I guess you could take that approach, but I'm happy enough. I feel content with what I'm doing. And the people I speak to at conferences, I don't get the sense that they feel overburdened. Because, no. I mean, the one thing is that, again, in the past, when you specialized, you had a certain amount of knowledge that you needed, but that knowledge was represented in, you know, your experience, your background, how it was implemented, and some form of documentation. Today, there's a lot more help for people out there.
Right.
In terms of God knows how many YouTube videos that you can go and look at, some of which are really not very good at all, and so many blogs you can read, et cetera, there's a lot more information for people to distill if they don't know how to do something. So as long as they have a good base knowledge.
Well, if you're not going to plug your thing, Tony, I'm going to plug it. Because I think the Office 365 for IT Pros book is amazing. And
thank you for saying that.
Don't know how you guys keep up. Well, how many additions have you made of this thing in the past, 2 years? Six?
No. We started doing it in 2015, and okay. So far we're now in our sixth edition because we republish every year. We work in a subscriber model, mm-hmm. So if you buy into the book, you get all of the updates that we issue for a year, and in that year we will issue at least 12 updates. So right now we're working on the update that will be released in early October for the 2020 edition, which is otherwise known as the sixth edition. We do it on an ongoing basis because literally it is the only way we can keep up with stuff.
Right.
And so here's an example. Here's an example of where the traditional publishing model or the traditional blog model falls down. On Tuesday, Patch Tuesday, September 10, Microsoft released build 1909 of Office Pro Plus. And everybody said, oh, what's that all about? Well, as it happened, Office Pro Plus 1909 includes native support for Office 365 sensitivity labels, which means that you don't have to use the Azure Information Protection Client anymore. Is that good? Yes, it is, because it means that people are now going to be able to protect and encrypt information within Office 365 much more easily than they can in the past.
Right.
So that's fantastic for users. It's fantastic for admins. It's absolutely horrible for people who write documentation or books or blogs, because just this one release means that pretty well any blog written about sensitivity labels over the last couple of years is gone, and the book and whatever. So today, just before this call, I have spent the entire day pretty well revising chapter 24 of the book to cover the new world of sensitivity labels as represented in Office Pro Plus 1909. So that's the way it happens.
That's fun.
But so we just go and we're in the groove, if you like. We publish, as I say, a completely new updated book, totally integrated every month. We have 24 content chapters after the last two years. I think the average number of chapters revised per update is between 12 and 13.
Wow.
So literally half of the book gets up revised every month.
Man. Now, do you end up doing two versions of this? One for folks that are coming in new and it's like, hey, you're just starting this. Great. You don't need to use this old thing. You can use a new thing. And then there's also, okay, so folks that have been with us for a couple of years, you were doing it this way. Now you really need to do it this other way.
No, we don't. We publish one book.
It's right.
Quite enough for us. You know, this is not a book you read end to end. If you did, you would be very bored.
Right.
It's a reference book. So it's a thing that if you have a problem, if you're an Exchange person and you need some help getting up to speed with SharePoint, you might read the SharePoint chapter. If you're a SharePoint person and you've all of a sudden been told you've got to deal with all of these group-enabled sites, then you might read the chapters we've got in Office 365 Group and Teams. If you're somebody who's needing some help breaking into data governance, you go and look at the data governance, DLP, whatever chapters. It's there as a reference, but it's different to what you find online. It's different to what you find on blogs, because we write based on our experience. It's not just me, by the way. You know, we have a team of six that do this, right? And between us, we've got about 50 years experience with Office 365. So we're writing it from the perspective of our practical experience of using this technology and in an overall sense. And I think that's important because, you see, the Microsoft documentation has come on tremendously over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's so much better than it used to be. In fact, it's 300% better than it used to be. And a lot of the people who the professional writers who document Microsoft technology should take enormous credit for that. The big problem the Microsoft documentation has is that it is written narrowly. It is written in the context of just a single app, a single implementation, a single context.
Right.
So if you go and read the Teams documentation, it's written in the context of how we do Teams. It's not written in the context of, well, gee, I'm running an Office 365 tenant and I've got this happening here and that happening over there and that happening over there. And gee, how do I fit Teams into that kind of thing? We try and answer those type of questions. We try and say, yeah, you've got this bag of tricks called Office 365. So how do you find the good tricks and how do you avoid the ones that aren't so good?
Right. Well, there's five ways to do this, and each product will tell you exactly how to use their individual product. They won't tell you which one's going to make you happier.
Yeah, but to be fair, that's not their job.
Right.
Their job is to describe how the product works as they expect it to work. And by the way, that phrase is very important, as they expect it to work.
Yes.
Because, of course, what happens is you've got a professional writer sits down with a program manager and they figure out, you know, the program manager tells them how things should work, and that's what they document. And sometimes it works beautifully like that, and sometimes it doesn't work so beautifully anymore. But that's just life, you know. You can't be perfect all the time. And I think anybody who attempts to attain perfection is going to be very unhappy.
Well, and I appreciate the upside to the book approach is that you do stale out old information. I mean, how many times do you look at a blog post and go, I don't know if this is right anymore?
Well, it's not. That's the whole point. A blog post, no, seriously. And I write tons of blog posts.
You write a blog post almost every day.
I do blog post every day and also write for Petri.com at least twice a week.
Right.
So, and I'm very, very aware that the stuff I write is out of date as soon as it appears. Because I can't tell you, well, I can tell you some stuff because I'm under NDA, but I can't tell you when other stuff is going to appear, which is going to negate what I've just said. So
right.
All I can report is what I see in Office 365 at the exact time when I commit this piece of text for publication. I can't tell you what's going to happen afterwards, and I can't tell you what's going to happen in your particular combination of Office 365. Because remember, we run Office 365 is broken up into a whole pile of data center regions, some of which are sovereign clouds, some of which are designed for government, some of which are not operated by Microsoft. So, you know, there's different versions of software right there.
Yeah.
Then inside a tenant, you can be on standard release or targeted release. You can be on standard release for some stuff and targeted release for others. You can be signed up for a couple of bases for different applications. And gosh knows how things might work between those different beta applications. You can have some users that have different versions of software on their workstations and, of course, different operating systems. So when we talk about Office 365, there's no one gold standard for Office 365. There's not one benchmark where you can say this is Office 365 as we see it. We've got to accept that it's Office 365 is a service full of moving parts. And so when we try and describe something in a blog, we're doing our very best to describe how we see the moving part right now
at that time.
But as I have said many times at conferences, and I'll say it again, blogs are like dead fish or visitors. After 3 days, they begin to smell. It's time to move on.
Yeah, it's as much as you can do. Do you take out old blog posts once you know they're wrong of your own, at least?
I go back in blog posts and I correct things. Yes, I do, but I'm strange like that. And if anybody ever comes to me and say, hey, I was reading something and I noticed this, you said this, but it's really like this now, I'll go back and I'll change it because I'm pedantic.
Yeah.
But you know, the vast majority of the net doesn't work like that.
No.
And if you talk to the professional journalists, you know, like our friends Mr. Carrot and Mary Jo Foley, mm-hmm. they just don't have the time to go and do that kind of stuff. They're on a treadmill of producing news articles, bang, bang, bang. They've got to get so many out every day to keep everybody happy. And so they don't have, you know, they're looking at their corpus of work and they're saying, gee, I've got, you know, 2,000 articles here. Am I going to go back and check them every year or every month? No, that's not going to happen at all. So I do take stuff offline. I do go and update, but I only do it when I absolutely know that something has changed and that I need to go and correct. And I will do that then. But I don't do it unless I'm prompted. So,
yeah.
By the way, people, please don't write in now and tell me all the articles on Petri.com that are out there. That would just be boring. Thanks very much.
I think that stream of posts that you put out on Office 365 IT Pros, if there was just a flag at the bottom of something that's 2 years old that says, hey, this is out of date, you know, keep searching. Like, I'm not going to fix everything here, but just to flag stuff, to give a warning. Although, if I see anything about Office 365 that's 2 years old, it's like, it's suspicious immediately.
Oh, yeah, I could do that. I could do that. I could put a public health warning.
Yeah.
But I honestly believe that readers are IT pros and they understand the way the world works. So I shouldn't need to tell them. Sometimes, you know, I'll go for the chief laugh in a conference and I'll just tell people what the way I feel about blogs being like dead fish, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But, you know, I expect the people know that because you see people when I say that, they're nodding their heads and saying, yeah, I was reading that blog the other day and I tried to use a sample command and it didn't work. Why didn't it work? But it was using a PowerShell module that is 50 versions newer than the PowerShell version of the person who wrote the blog did. And so there was different properties. It's so much stuff changes.
Yeah, it's a constant flow. So what's next for you, Tony? Where are we going to see you? You're going to be at Ignite?
Yep. I have 3 sessions at Ignite.
Wow.
I'm going to be talking about Teams. I'm going to be talking about I'm going to do a session that I've done in a number of other conferences, but it's an evolving session where I talk about Teams and email and why Teams will never take over from email, at least not in my professional lifetime. And there's no goodness or badness about that. It's just a reflection of the way these are very different technologies for different things. They have different purposes within the business world in particular. So I'll talk about that. And I have a couple of sessions that I can't talk about because I'm under NDA until I give them. One of them is a very exciting one for about Exchange. I will say that.
Cool.
Exchange and a technology that I'm not very good at, but I write a lot of code in. So I let people try and interpret it. Cryptic.
A little cryptic.
Yeah, I'll be at Ignite. I'm enjoying myself and I'll join meet me there.
For sure. Tony Redmond, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.